the first factor when it comes to waking up the wife or stimulating, you know, invigorating that material energy. It's the first step, not the last. And in one sense, well, anyway, it's the first one. The verse says that in his glance, the time energy is cast. The time energy contacts that sleeping material nature. If we look in the purport, we see at the bottom of page 18, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that even when he casts his glance, there is no real contact. It's Shambhu who makes the contact that we'll talk about shortly. So it's like, again, a chintya beda bait. There's contact, but there's no contact. It's direct, but it's indirect. So what happens actually is, even though there's not exactly contact between Mahavishnu himself in person and the external energy, the glance makes contact, and as a service to Mahavishnu, Rama, the goddess of fortune, arranges for different things to go down the glance, to be sent through the glance, and in that way to enter the material nature. And Rama is closely, has at least some sort of affiliation, some sort of relationship with that external material energy. On page 19, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that this deluding energy, the material energy, is the maidservant of Rama. So they have a connection. It's like, well, like Prabhupada said in that purport we read, the material energy is like a co-wife who's sleeping. Actually, of course, we in ISKCON don't have so much experience with co-wives. In fact, in the past, I've known two devotees who each had two wives. They tried it. Didn't work, unfortunately. But in this case, the Maya Devi is taken to be the co-wife, but she is like a secondary co-wife. Yeah. So she is a maidservant of the main wife, who is Rama. Rama is, you know, the chief wife. And Maya is also a wife, but in a very secondary type of position, like a maidservant. So Maya serves Rama. Rama is serving Mahavishnu. He wants the material energy to be activated so all the fallen souls can get another chance to go back to Godhead. At this point, in between the previous destruction and this creation which is just about to happen now, in between, when material energy is inert, then the living entities, all the jivas, are within Mahavishnu. They're in a state called susupti. Susupti means deep sleep. And why are they in a state of deep sleep? I mean, how could you sleep that long? That's a long time. They're in a state of deep sleep because their karma has stopped. They're not receiving any karmic reactions Not that all their karmic reactions are lost. They're there. But they're inert. Because we're receiving, because people are receiving karmic reactions, then they're stimulated from one activity to another. But when their karma stops, they go into the state of susupti. How come their karma stopped? Because time stopped. Time is driving everything in this material world. You get one karmic reaction and you experience it, then it's finished. Then under the influence of time, your next karmic reaction comes. So in this way, the living entity is swept from one situation to another by the force of time, which is invigorating the stock of karma and letting you get one bit of karma after another. However, when the creation is wound up, time stops. And time also goes into Mahavishnu and remains in a latent state there. And therefore, we go in there like in a cocoon of our karma. But our karma has stopped. So therefore, we go into this state of susupti. I hope that makes sense. That's a little bit of background information. So, because Rama understands the desire of Mahavishnu, he wants those living entities to again come out, go into the material world, get a chance to go back to Godhead. Of course, they're prone also to misuse the chance and just get further lost in material life. But actually, the main idea behind the material creation is Mahavishnu wants the living entities to get the opportunity to go back to Godhead, which they can't do when they're in that state of susupti, deep sleep within him. So, understanding his desire, Rama, when he glances, Rama arranges that the various things required to get the material creation going again and to get the living entities going again in the material creation, she arranges that they're sent through the glance. And Maya Devi, the co-wife, but the secondary co-wife, who is like a maidservant of Rama, she understands this and helps. You follow the idea? So, just at the end of the purport, we're going to draw a diagram of all this shortly, actually. And I think it'll help to make it all clearer. But we could just note that at the end of this purport, page 19, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Rama sends the time energy, was said, which represents the force of activity, two things, the force of activity and the force of instrumentality of Rama. The force of activity means the karma. And the force of instrumentality means the desire of the Lord, which is adopted by Rama as her desire, seeing she's a servant of the Lord. The Lord's desire is her desire. So the force of the karma of the living entities and the force of the desire of the Lord that they again become active and get this opportunity to go back to Godhead. They are like the functions, or they are, it says, they represent the time energy, or the time energy represents them. The time energy has those capacities. And then shortly, the living entities come. Okay, let's go on to text 8. Oh, let's just chant the Sanskrit first. Niyati sarama devi. Tat priyatad vasham tada. Tal lingam bhagavan shambhur. Jyoti rupa sanatana. Yayoni sapara shakti. Kamo bijam mahadare. Translation. The secondary process of association with Maya is described. Ramadevi, the spiritual chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all living entities. She is the mother of devotion. She is watching over all the jivas. She is concerned. Yeah. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. That's Mahavishnu. At creation, when all this is about to happen, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. What I take that to mean is that his glance, you know, it's something like when you have a torch at night. You know what I mean? I mean, when we glance, you cannot see that some energy is being transmitted. But if you turn on a torch at night, you can see there's like a physical beam of light, actually, which is being projected through space. So perhaps it's something like that. There appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. It is of the nature of Mahavishnu. Subjective portion means Mahavishnu. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. It's a perverted reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion of divinity who functions as progenitor of the mundane world. That's Lord Shiva. He's the original progenitor, because he is that glance through which the living entities are injected into the womb of material nature, subject to the supreme regulatrix, as the previous verse and purport particularly mentioned. Rama is overseeing this. The conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix, the potencies coming from her. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, upara, means inferior potency, the symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So that may sound a little complex. You know, essentially, and in fact, the next verse 9 and verse 10 make it really vividly obvious. What we are reading about here is actually the original, and in fact it is the prototype, material, reproductive act. Actually. Yeah. That is precisely what it is. Let us try to illustrate it on the board. Yeah, let us do that. So, I'm going to stand up now. By Ramas, it's Shambhu is like a halo, or like a beam of light, something like that. by Rama's arrangement. Time, or actually you could say the Kala Shakti, the potency of time, is projected into Maya. And that Kala Shakti actually embodies two specific functions, or it has two specific potencies implicit within it. One is, what did we say? The force of activity.
Karma. The karma of the living entities.
The force of their activities. Plus,
the will of the Lord, which is sometimes called Iksha Shakti. We don't want to complicate things
with too many terms, but anyway. Huh? Iksha means desire. The will of the Lord. Yes. And actually, they're really only going to sort of come into the picture in a few verses' time, but let's just put them in the diagram for now. The living entities, too.
There go the living entities. They're on their way also.
How's that? All these things are being projected through the glance. The glance, in other words, is a medium. And on the basis of Rama's potency, these things are being injected into Maya. When the living entities enter Maya, along with the time potency, then because the time potency includes their karma and the desire of the Lord, so the time potency awakens their karma and, you know, starts this whole process, which is the will of the Lord, that they again become active and get the opportunity to go back to Godhead. As long as they don't fall down into material life, which many of them do. But anyway, the main idea is to give them the opportunity to go back to Godhead. So in this regard, just to understand the different roles of the four different persons, we have four people here. We have Mahavishnu, we have Rama, we have Shambhu, and we have Maya Devi. Just to understand their specific roles, we could say that
Mahavishnu
if we use the example of an electrical powerhouse, it's fairly sort of applicable under the circumstances. So what is Mahavishnu's part in this whole thing? He is like the powerhouse.
Ma, she is like the electrical energy.
She is the actual potency, and she's dealing with the potencies. Then Shambhu,
the wire,
you could say, that the electricity is running through,
and Maya
is like the electrified object. There. In the translation of text 8, right at the very end, the last sentence, Lord Brahma says that the intercourse of Shambhu and Maya, here we have husband and wife, literally, they're actually husband and wife. So, the intercourse of this original husband and wife brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition. What does that mean? Means that the first thing that happens, is that the Mahatattva, the Pradhan, starts transforming into the Mahatattva. And the first part of that, the first thing to manifest is false ego. False ego. When the Pradhan, you know, we said it's something like a soup, a very mushy soup where everything has just been totally boiled into everything else. So in that, in this original primordial soup, when time and the living entities, time with the karma and the will of the Lord embodied within it, when they all contact Pradhan, then that cosmic soup starts to unravel. By unravel, I mean, if we use the example of the soup, it starts a process of going backwards from being like a total soup of coming to a point where all the original ingredients are there in their own original conditions. You follow what I mean? Yes. It's exactly like that. You turn around the process of making the soup. So at the end of that, there you get your potato and your cauliflower and a little bit of salt is there and the spices are here and there in their own individual positions. Yeah. That is now Mahatattva. When the Pradhan has been unraveled and the different ingredients which are there but which are all mushed together when it's Pradhan, when they're all visible, there's the earth, there's the water, there's the fire, and, you know, they're all there in their specific positions. So the first part of that process is false ego comes. False ego is the first part of the unraveling of the material nature. And what is that false ego? He says, it's the reflection of the seed. What was the seed of this whole process? The procreative desire of the Lord. Yeah. The thing is that because Mahavishnu, through his manifestation as his glance, which is still part and parcel of him, but it's become a little separated from him, when that separated part of himself contacts Maya, because Maya is Maya and is the external inferior energy, then that projected form, at least not really projected form, but projected manifestation of his nature, Shambhu, contacts Maya. Then it's like when milk contacts a souring agent. The milk becomes yogurt. So you cannot really say that Shambhu is something different altogether from Mahavishnu. Shambhu is Mahavishnu's glance. But at the same time, he's become separated. And he's very deeply in contact with Maya. So as a result, just like milk converts into yogurt when it's soured, so Shambhu is, in a sense, he's like at least a manifestation of, a type of manifestation of Mahavishnu. But his position has been changed.
in terms of the contact with Maya. And their contact, which is, as we said, the original prototype reproductive act, has its seed in the desire of the Lord to give the living entities the opportunity to go back to Godhead through this like activity which is based on his conjugal relationship with Rama. So that's enough to meditate on for today, I think. I hope it hasn't been too bewildering. Any comments or questions? Yeah. What about it? See, when Pradhan becomes Mahatattva, by the power of time, and which includes the living entity's karma, then, you know, that activates matter. Matter becomes activated by that glance of the Lord, which includes that time factor, that powerful moving factor, which activates everything. So time activates the pradhan and starts it's like a standard procedure of the pradhan unraveling. It's just like, you know, the opposite idea when you cook a soup. As soon as you apply fire, then all the ingredients automatically go into this process of breaking down, and eventually they come to the point of merging with each other altogether. Right? That is implicit in applying fire to a soup. So when time is applied to the material nature, it starts a procedure of the unraveling of the ingredients, separating the ingredients from each other. Yeah. Separating the ingredients from each other. And as the ingredients start to separate from each other, the first ingredient which becomes apparent, which manifests, is false ego. Yeah. Perverted cognition, otherwise known as false ego. Mainly the question is, does Shambhu develop false ego or does the jiva? It's mainly the jiva. But Shambhu gets a little bit. That's why he's considered to be yogurt and not milk. Because there is actually a change. Yeah. There is actually a change. Therefore he's known as Shiva Tattva. He's not Vishnu Tattva exactly. He's certainly not Jiva Tattva either. He's in his own category. So there has been a change. Yeah. But, you know, the jivas, oh, they are just completely overcome by it. But he is also in that position. You know, there are elements of it there. Difference between the causal ocean and Viraja River? No. They are actually two names for the same thing. That river or body of water which divides the material realm from the spiritual realm, and in which, on which, lies Mahavishnu. Yeah. Yeah. Question is that, or comment that, is Pradhan, what is the position of Pradhan? And there's a suggestion that it may actually be spiritual or in between, something like that, material and spiritual. But it's already been stated that it's apara. It's apara. It's that inferior nature. So pradhan basically, you know, in one sense, everything is spiritual. But the pradhan is, as we said, it's the raw ingredients of the material nature. It's all there. All the ingredients are there. The earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all the various things, they're all there. But they're not manifest in their own